and they have separate subsections on falsely incriminating another through a false report and fictitious reports. Well, we certainly haven't had any outcry from any source, one way or another, regarding this this area.
You mean public or private or both?
Either.
That's what I mean.
Either one. But we didn't feel that we should do away with our existing statutes. We just felt that that they should belong, take them out of 476 and put them over here in the penal code.
You might take a look and see what we did this past session in the House Judiciary. I think we passed out one on false reports, police reports, because Multnomah County was having trouble with, at least Clark was telling us that they were having trouble, cars dumped in rivers and this kind of stuff. They'd go out there and find that nothing was out there, and they'd drag and send their crews out and all this sort of stuff. Maybe he doesn't have it anymore, but he had it at least once.
Well, I think this is enough generally known that we have laws against it. We sure ought to keep it in here somewhere. I don't know if the language is right or not, but I'd sure hate to see it left out.
I believe that the municipal code of Portland has a, as I recall looking through it, a pretty good statement of fire and police reports as a municipal ordinance violation. Might be a source to look at.
Yeah, why don't we do this? We can meet just before the next meeting, or maybe circulate it, but I think we all agree that we should have a false fire report, and I think we want to make it as broad as possible, picking up both public and private. Do we want to extend it to false emergency reports, which would pick up police reports and heart vehicles and ambulances, akin to the model penal code, fire alarm, a fire, or other emergency? Do we want to make it that broad? I presume we do. Unless I hear contrary.
Broad. Or other emergencies.
Well, let's do this. Let's kind of put it around the model penal code and compare it to our present statute as far as the false alarm is concerned. How about the false report? My feeling would be to take a look, and I don't remember what we passed in the House.
Still, that word gratuitously, on reflection, I think it's used because it's referring to a report that originates in the person giving the report
rather than a response from a police officer.
Investigative question.
So yeah. Wouldn't that be unsolicited?
Yeah, what they mean by gratuitously is an unsolicited.
Why the difference?
Well, they don't want to, as it points out in the commentary there, in the Wisconsin code is the liberal one, and they allow the prosecution for any oral statement made to a police officer may be false. And do you want to go that far?
Well, we've already got a false statement to a to an official body, officer, don't we? If you file a false statement.
That's not an oral statement.
It's a written statement.
Yeah, and they point out here in the Wisconsin thing, they're the commentary on it, they point out that if you're going to prosecute someone criminally for that, at least it probably should have been reduced to writing, such as a false police report. Or
Which I assume in the investigations they ordinarily do. Reduce it to a written statement and ask them to sign it.
Not necessarily, but they do create their own police reports based upon witnesses' statements, but I don't believe, at least in my experience, rarely do the witnesses sign that.
Well, can you prosecute now for an oral statement made to a police officer?
No.
I believe you can under this municipal ordinance. That's
in Portland, you can.
I believe
Multnomah
so.
County, perhaps.
It's been 3 years since I read it, but I'm sure you can.
Well, what's your pleasure, gang? Do we want to decide now, or should we take a look at what we did in 69 session and also this Portland municipal ordinance? Don, any suggestions?
Well, I can go in the office and pull out that bill from the last session if you want. If you want to take a look at that while you're here.
It may have gone bye-bye over in the House, or it may not even...
Yeah.
It may have gone under in the Senate.
Well, if you want to go ahead and something else, just take me a minute.
If there's any good, I'm sure it went through the Senate.
Funny how attitudes change, and it came...
I hate to see that carefree look gone forever. I can't even cry.
Oh, I'll bounce back. How you getting along?
Oh, thanks.
And, on 11.
I think I'll redraft it for you.
Okay.
Well, that's a good idea.
But I think you know.
I think we can do it now if you can give us a minute, really.
Could you,
if you don't mind.
No, why don't you go ahead? We'll go back to recess.
Yeah, we'll recess.
I have one here that is built on the model penal code. A person commits the crime of rendering a false report if he knowingly causes a false alarm or report to be transmitted to a fire department, law enforcement agency, or other organization that deals with emergencies involving danger to life or property. Period.
Oh.
I like that. Mine's just
and that includes Kenny's
yeah.
area,
yeah.
too.
Okay, we buy that?
Did you throw in there having good reason to believe?
No, I didn't. we could put that in. The only thing is, on knowingly, under our definition of knowingly, really I think it's a question of whether you've got enough to get to a jury anyway.
Now the receiving concealing statute's been up on that point. They've said that having good reason to know is sufficient.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're the element you need to establish is knowingly. If your evidence is that he had good reason to know, that's isn't that enough to get you to a jury anyway? Or do you think?
Yes, it probably is.
Now, we've discussed this concept several times in the commission, particularly with respect to stolen property. And I think it's kind of an academic question. But I mean, if you feel that. There's a good reason why it should be in there. I don't think it hurts anything to put it in. It just makes for a shorter statement of the crime without it. But
can you read it again?
A person commits the crime of rendering a false report if he knowingly causes a false alarm or report to be transmitted to a fire department, law enforcement agency, or other organization that deals with emergencies involving danger to life or property.
Mine's very similar. Any person who knowingly or having good reason to know makes or causes to be made a false report or alarm to any
now,
is guilty of a misdemeanor. I didn't define the crime in the heading. So.
Could that cover the situation where you're making a response to a police officer who's investigating a crime?
Well, if you make a false report, if in response to questioning, you mean by a... Well, I don't think that should be excluded anyway, but... I mean, if it's knowingly false,
mm-hmm.
and if it's in response to a question other than this, then gratuitously made, I don't think that should make any difference as far as the culpability. I think it's the same. Seemed to me it would be.
Well, this comes up quite often, I think, doesn't it, when you have the shy witnesses?
It comes up more often when you have someone trying to throw the investigating officers off the track on a fast-breaking situation, like if they went that away when they went that away.
Okay, well, Mr. Haas, do you move the amendment to Section 11 as read by Mr. Collette? Any further discussion? If not, those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried. May I move the adoption of Section 11 as amended right now? Right,
yeah, that still kind of worries me a little. Right, that we're doing this. We're talking about sections 1 and 2, aren't we? Included within.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be to replace them both.
And this will have the effect of enlarging the present situation where the oral report, an oral statement made to a police officer, requested and solicited by the officer, could be the subject of prosecution.
I think it could be under this suggested language, yeah.
I think it'd be a question of false report. Perhaps we're spending it in that, but...
Well, the only thing that kind of worries me, I think, I don't know, I just think that when you got a, maybe it's the, again, the game, you know, but you got a crime committed, and you got the police officer out talking to witnesses, and you got the defense counsel out talking to witnesses. And he lies to the police officer, he'd be prosecuted. He lies to the defense counsel, nothing. Isn't that what we're...
Perhaps that could be amended to put the word initial or initiating in front of report or alarm. The first instance of notifying.
I mean, if every time you talk to a police officer, what we're doing is every time you talk to a police officer, you're in essence testifying under oath, subject to the penalties of being prosecuted for your statement if it's an error. I mean, that's big,
yeah,
that's a pretty big policy statement.
Mm-hmm. Would that be solved by qualifying what report or alarm is?
People are going to be a little reluctant to talk, I think.
Well, they shouldn't they be?
Well, I really don't think we want to get to the point where we take that one further step towards the police state where every statement you make to a man in blue put you in a position on prosecution, do we?
Yeah,
I think there's a distinction between your conduct as a citizen, your obligation as a citizen, and what you can, as contrast to what you can be prosecuted for. I don't know.
I tend to agree with you, Carl, which is...
Well, it's astounding.
Now you got me worried. You two guys agree, I guess.
Yeah, that's similar to the Wisconsin statute that you had mentioned earlier. And I think just makes it a, provide 6 months imprisonment for giving false information to law enforcement officers regarding commission of a crime.
Well, that's a big deal.
And as I said, the Canadian criminal code is even broader, with a 5-year maximum for giving false information to the Mounties. Don't fool with the Mountie.
Don't monkey with the Mountie.
The method in my agreeing is that sometimes false statements made in the course of an investigation are as good a prosecutorial evidence as you can get from anywhere.
How about
telling me you're prosecuted on the basis of false statements?
Use it for impeachment.
Without solicitation, reports, or without being solicited, reports or causes to be transmitted, or
yeah, I like that. I think a citizen takes that, and they start the ball rolling, and they've got to be responsible.
I believe it's a question of how often the prosecution would want to avail themselves of the statute, because I assume that people lie to the police a great deal of the time, don't they? I mean, the police lie to 50 times a day in Multnomah County?
Let the record show that Roger's remarks, don't they, was addressed to Representative Carson.
Well, what do you think, Don? Can we put unsolicited in? I don't like gratuitously. Although, I can see why they use it.
Well, aren't we trying to protect the excessive or use or the needless use of public emergency equipment? And isn't this what this is designed to do? If we're going no further than that, then anybody who causes the initial report to issue. I mean, this is not does not contemplate follow-up investigation.
That's right.
Just who called the fuzz?
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
That's right.
Police officers, I mean.
Except that what we've incorporated in this is subsection 2, which...
Well, I think this...
Well, it's aimed at the same thing, the waste of governmental resource. In other words, that you're sending the police off on a wild goose chase by giving them false information and wasting a lot of money and time.
Well, of course, the guy who intentionally lies in the course of a police investigation is really a bad actor for a different reason. I mean,
Yeah, I have no sympathy for him. If that's the answer, the officer just writes it down and says, now sign it, and we've got a crime against that. All we're really saying is that you've got a right to verbally lie to a cop, but if he puts it in writing, he will put you in jail for doing the same thing writing.
Well, of course, that's what your law of perjury says, that you can lie as long as you don't do it under oath.
Well,
we're giving a police officer the status of a judge.
Yeah, matches.
If it's signed.
Let me check my phone.
Yeah, this is just a further extension of perjury.
So what we're saying...
Now we're getting into oral. Unsworn.
Yeah. You see, the difference, the big difference here, one is the safeguard of perjury is that you're in a court of law, you're in a court of record, you're sworn, it's transcribed.
How about a false statement?
To a police officer, a verbal statement to a police officer?
No, a false statement, period. Is it not true that we have a crime now that
false police report.
Just a false statement. Come on in, I'll be right with you.
Are you in formal session?
Yeah, we are, but our formal sessions are informal.
I see.
I intend to come down and sign those letters.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll see you later.
Or you can bring them up. Excuse me. Statement, though, that if you write it, right? You sign statement.
Do we have that now?
What's that?
If you take a written statement...
No, but I mean in our...
A police officer takes a written statement from a witness, and it turns out to be not true. Can they prosecute him criminally for that?
Not presently, to my
knowledge. Now, a false police report, I mean, where you go down and you make, like, the Grenfell thing, that
Stole
he was found guilty. He went down, he submitted a false report that he'd been kidnapped, when in fact he hadn't. Now, that's a big deal. That's like we're talking about. It's initiating the wheels of law enforcement to go in action on an assertion that you've made, as opposed to... just a verbal... statement to a police officer. Boy, that really gives the police a
good weapon.
Well, here we have this, and we've approved it. At least my notes have it. A person commits a crime of unsworn falsification. He makes any false written statement in an application for a pecuniary benefit or other benefit, knowing or having reason to know it to be false, or submits or invites reliance on any written instrument he knows to be forged, altered, or otherwise lacking in authenticity. Now, my only point is, I mean, there are distinctions, I grant you, but what I'm saying is that we go to the point that we have an unsworn written falsification crime.
Yeah, but in those cases, those individuals who have done it are occupy the position as a party to the situation. It's a fraud situation, what it is, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
For their own.
You're saying they're involved in,
they're involved
in the governmental transaction themselves.
Yeah, and they're doing it for their own pecuniary benefit. We're saying, look, when you deal with the government, boy, you send in written statements.
How about
have
other benefit? In other words, getting the heat off of them, throwing the burden onto somebody else. If you do it in writing, we got a crime against that. If you do it orally, it's King's X.
For example, I think the police quite often ask people if you know where someone is or where he can be found,
yeah.
And they'll say, no, I don't. And of course, he might be in the next room. I mean, you know, they do.
During the course of an investigation of any major criminal offense, we do an awful lot of work, which is called background in your neighborhood. And I can foresee a real problem where you go around to all of the people and say, do you know this man? Many people might say no or give information to keep themselves uninvolved, as the trend is now.
Yeah.
Now, well, that may not be the best thing for a person to do socially. I don't think it rises to the dignity of a crime.
Well, I used to be an investigator. Sometimes I'd be asking someone, you know John Jones? He said no, and you know where I located him? No, I don't. And I'd find out later I'd been talking to John Jones.
Yeah. Or it was his brother.
Yeah.
Well, then what if we use the military phrase, initiates a report? Or
this seems sensible to me.
I mean, don't we, Harl, you agree that
I think it's
a guy
hard
who blows
to
the
find.
Whistle starts it himself, I would get cracked in the knuckle.
I think it's hard to combine the two, though, where you're talking about the one where we're... I like the idea and Kenny's inclusion of the private sector now. I'm convinced that's a good idea. But starting out with a fire and ambulance and life and limb. I think that's... we're talking about apples and oranges. I think that's different from a a law enforcement officer, which is point two in here, coming up and doing an investigation.
No, but that's not what this says. Or it's not intended to say. Maybe that's what we say now, but...
This is more directed at the guy who calls up and says, they're holding up the bank,
yeah.
You know, and they're shooting it out at the bank.
Exactly.
Fifth and Morrison or something.
And to say it's all right, it's wrong to do it to the fire, but it's all right to do it to the law officer, I just don't grab it.
But the language goes beyond that, doesn't it? Here it goes beyond it.
I think it might, yes. I think you've got a legitimate objection to it. I don't think that's, we could argue, well, this isn't what it's intended to do, but it's pretty broad. We talk about law enforcement agency.
Isn't our amendment directed to the emergency situation and by putting the word initiate or false before report in there with that
word? Initiate.
Where did you have initiate? Where would that go?
Before report or alarm. Any person who, whether a person is guilty of the crime of rendering a false report if he knowingly initiates a false alarm or report.
To a fire department.
To a fire department or law enforcement agency. If he starts the ball rolling, too bad you can't put that in there.
Now, see, I would
then, but we brand.
You have to type
knowingly
it out.
Initiates.
Starts the ball rolling.
He knowingly starts the said ball rolling.
Such ball rolling.
If he knowingly initiates the ball, no. Starts the ball rolling as hereinafter expressly provided.
And above, here before it.
Okay, so that would read, a person commits the crime of rendering a false report if he knowingly initiates a false alarm or report to a fire department, law enforcement agency, or other organization that deals with emergencies involving danger to life or property.
I believe that states it, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Why don't we change the thing to initiate the false report rather than renders the false report?
Oh, initiating a false report?
The time of the crime.
So. Yeah.
That's the key, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Anybody know what initiate means?
It's when you're sworn in.
Yeah, they hack you. Instigates.
Starts.
All right, then let's get a fictitious situation where two kids get together and say, all right, you send it in, and then I'll call and pick up and say, no, that first one's wrong, it's going the other direction. You let the second guy off. Now I'm being fixed.
No,
because
he initiated the second one.
Huh?
He initiated the second one.
If they were both acting together.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and one would be as guilty as the other.
Right, okay. Because they do this.
Do you move that amendment, Mr. Haas?
Yeah, did he, Don, you want to, I hate to say this, would you read it once more?
Picky.
A person commits the crime of initiating a false report if he knowingly initiates a false report. No, that's the way to read. If he knowingly initiates a false alarm or report to a fire department, law enforcement agency, or other organization that deals with emergencies involving danger to life or property.
That's a move.
You do? He moves. Oh, okay. Mr. Haas moves it. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor of amending it as according to Mr. Haas's motion, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. So amended. Now that we are. Mr. Haas now moves the adoption of Section 11 as amended. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Section 12. Person commits the crime of criminal impersonation if he falsely impersonates a public servant and does an act in such assumed character. We have a public servant identified somewhere else.
It's defined in the bribery article.
Oh, yeah. Section blank of the bribery another correction. This is all existing law, isn't it?
We have many statutes.
This is existing law?
Well, we have many personation statutes. Many of which, though, don't involve public servants, but involve private organizations.
Yeah, I can give you a little background on that as far as the commission is concerned.
Yeah, this came up in a different article originally.
We discussed this in Subcommittee 1 several months ago in connection with our crimes against property. And one approach that we considered taking was to have a general section like this in, forgery, I think, forgery and related offenses, false impersonation type crimes, but we felt that since it wasn't necessarily connected with an attempt to obtain property under false pretense or something of that nature, that if we're going to have such a statute, and the feeling was that we should retain a statute such as prohibiting impersonation of a police officer and that type of thing, but that it should be dealt with in another article rather than the property crimes. So, and we discussed, among other, there's a whole raft of statutes on the books now that prohibit false impersonation of a fraternal officer or membership in a fraternal organization.
Is it a crime to do that now without seeking money?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, if I go out and say I'm a member of the Elks and I'm not a member of the Elks, I've committed a crime.
Yeah, right. And of course, the feeling of the subcommittee number one felt that all those statutes should be repealed, and that there are plenty of private redress that's open to fraternal organizations to prohibit this type of thing. And in most instances, this situation might come up where you're misrepresenting your membership in a fraternal organization for the purposes of obtaining property or something, and
then you've got a fraud.
Then you've got some other statute that covers it anyway.
Could I ask if the token requirement has been removed from obtaining money by
false
pretenses?
Yes, it
has. Yeah. Privity is sufficient as well as without the token.
Yeah, right. That was removed in our draft on that.
Where can I find
theft?
Where can I find a public servant definition?
If you look page
here it is, 56.
56, third paragraph. Any public officer or employee of a government.
Pretty sweeping, isn't it?
What kind of an act must he do as a public servant? Must he act as a public servant or just do?
He would have to act as a public servant, but not necessarily an act the public servant was authorized to do. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have been only an act he was authorized to do.
According to the Hamilton case, that's what you're...
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm ignorant. We have other law that would prevent a man from impersonating a representative of a light company or a bank or something like that from coming onto my premises.
Well, you'd have a trespass.
Not, that wouldn't be a crime just in and of itself without some other motive.
Well, I mean, with intent to defraud me.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's defraud. It is fraud.
Or
robbery.
Or maybe he just wanted to look around. What if a guy said, knocked on the door and said, and he wanted to look my house over just for any particular purpose. I represent Pacific Power and Light, and I want to look to see if your house is wired properly or any. Tell me.
I don't think that would be a crime, because as a matter of fact, private investigators do that sort of thing all the time.
Well, it depends, though. Now it depends on what intent he does this with.
Bragging or confessing?
No. For example, if he's kind of casing your house for the purpose of burglarizing it that night, or the next day or something, then you've got a different can of worms. So
what if he's a representative of a bank and more or less an appraiser, and he all of a sudden you wondered what my house is like inside. Maybe somebody want, or a real estate man or something like that, wanted to purchase it later. Knock on the door and say, I'm with a U.S. bank, when he really wasn't.
You can have a civil remedy. You'd have a trespass remedy.
Trespass, but you wouldn't have a criminal.
No.
Why wouldn't you have criminal?
Because, as I recall, it has to be posted.
Well, we've eliminated that requirement under our draft.
The present status is, though.
Yeah, right. You're right there, I think. But now, criminal trespass, as we've proposed it,
but we do have a number of private interest statutes that get to that. For example, if he impersonated an engineer, a professional engineer, there's a law against that. That's in the engineer's code.
See, criminal trespass in the second degree will be a person commits this crime if he enters or remains unlawfully in or upon premises. So first degree is in or remains unlawfully in a dwelling. So if you're, in your case, if it were your house, it could be a criminal trespass.
Are we retaining that one, Roger? Engineer, will that be retained?
You see, no. And then we define what we mean by enter or remain unlawfully. Means to enter or remain in or upon premises when the premises at the time of such entry or remaining are not open to the public and when the actor is not otherwise licensed or privileged to do so.
Well, it wouldn't necessarily be repealed. It's not in the criminal code.
I would hope that it would be repealed.
Okay.
Well, any... any further discussion on 12? Satisfied with it, Ken?
Oh, yeah. That's wild, isn't it?
What?
Am I wrong? Isn't the definition of public servant...
It has been changed in... preliminary draft number 2, the substance hasn't been changed, but the form has been changed.
I remember we had all
it
that.
It does include jurors. But it does include, of course, law enforcement personnel, and I think that's the most common situation.
This includes anybody that's employed by the state. Anybody.
State, it would include county, district attorneys.
Include water meter reader.
A problem district attorneys have is private investigators calling up and saying their district attorney's investigating. This is very recurrent.
Do they do that?
Frequently.
I never did that.
You just said you were a meter reader.
I had about 50 business cards, but I didn't have one from the district attorney's office.
Is my conservative streak so broad that it disturbs me that, to impersonate any employee of the government is going to be a crime?
Well, why shouldn't it be a crime?
Is my liberal?
Well, why should it be?
I think we've got to start out with the idea that everything goes. We're going to prohibit misconduct that's reprehensible to the public. And so you say, is that conduct so bad?
Do we really need false? Don't do any. Don't bug anybody. Or go on the beat in a policeman's uniform.
Well, I guess that's an act in your assumed character, isn't it?
Yep. That's why.
Well, the reasons we've given the commentary here, two, prevents an unwarranted imposition on people under the guise of proper authority, and seeks to maintain respect for genuine authority by discouraging discreditable impersonations, although you might be a fine police officer on the beat, so that would be fine.
What if, I didn't realize I had such a liberal streak, because to me, anybody that impersonates something that he is not is guilty of
a crime.
Of, almost.
I mean, a guy that says he was in a certain organization, and he gets a lot of publicity for it, and find out later, hell, the guy wasn't even there. To me, he's created or committed a crime, because he was sailing under false pretenses. He probably, maybe, I remember a group of singers they had in Portland at one time, and they were billed pretty heavily. One of them was supposed to have been a member of a certain organization. Hell, he wasn't anywhere near it. They got a lot of jobs singing, because he was impersonating. Is this a crime or not?
Was that Charlie Chan and the
Royal
Mongoose?
No, something like that. Yeah, the Royal Mongoose.
I can tell you a serious incident that happened to me at the first trial, where I had a witness who became completely unfavorable and adverse because she had been called up and threatened by an investigator from the district attorney's office. So testify. And she wasn't.
Well,
she wasn't called
in. I almost lost the case because of
it. I mean,
but where?
Could you do anything
I see
now?
Things like that in persecuting a district attorney now? Or in persecuting a police officer or in acting in that capacity. But this is public. It says anybody that's employed by the state. That means a hearing officer for the Workman's Compensation Board.
How about a guardian?
It means an investigator for the Workman's Compensation Board. Or the State Compensation Department, an adjuster, an insurance adjuster, that's all they are, an investigator over for SIAC.
How about a groundskeeper for the Capitol Building?
Yeah.
All right, let's say a fellow impersonated a groundskeeper for the Capitol Building, and somebody in Eastern Oregon decided that would make a good topic in front of a group, and they were willing to pay a groundskeeper to come up and tell them the experiences with the squirrels or something out here, and he got paid $25 for it.
Well, I think that's the difference. You're taking money under false pretense.
But you're adding the deceit and fraud.
Yeah. Right. You'd have to add that before you got the job.
Some of these personation statutes in states are restricted to policemen, law enforcement.
Who is the guy that impersonated everybody? Who's that guy? Remember they made a movie about him?
Oh, yeah.
He even performed surgery.
It was Tony Curtis.
He impersonated the impersonator.
Or Bernie Schwartz.
Bernie Schwartz impersonates Tony Curtis.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I know this is always getting hung up on the... Leo and I, this is
the problem you run into when you try to consolidate a bunch of fragmented statutes and put them, you know, put them under one broad statute so you'll have a more workable code.
Could we not do this? Could we not perhaps have an indication from Roger what all these are? We might be able to put blanket categories. We might find some compromise.
Well, of course you could.
And extend it to law enforcement officers.
You notice on page 57, this that section 12 that you had included in the forgery, you have the intent there to obtain a benefit or injure or defraud another.
Yeah, and of course there it was framed initially as part of the property crime area, say.
But I don't know about not including the defraud necessarily, but with an intent to obtain a benefit for yourself or injure another.
Yeah. You could include...
Would narrow it considerably.
Any person who impersonates a public servant with the intent to obtain a benefit or injure another.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Yeah, with the intent to obtain a benefit.
Injure another or defraud.
And there you're getting rid of the harmless impersonations.
Yeah. Deb, you buy that, Harley?
I think that's what improve.
Ken? Okay, let's do that. Possibly the addition of the words with the intent to...
I'd say benefit himself or injure another.
The intent to obtain a benefit.
Yeah.
Or injure or defraud another.
You've heard that. Any discussion on the amendment?
One other suggestion I might make, too, is that we should incorporate by reference our definitions of benefit and public servant. That are in our bribery and corrupt influences draft. I mean, The staff can do that, but I think it should.
That'll be presumed to be in the motion. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Chairman Stad moves the adoption of Section 12 as amended. Any discussion? Okie dokie. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. You voted aye, didn't you, Ryan?
I'm still keeping an open mind on it. Commission.
Okay, you can.
I vote aye on it now.
Good. What's a state sealer?
We have a state sealer.
A state sealer?
Yes.
I don't know.
What ORS 618290. First guy's a state sealer or his deputy.
Yeah, like
one that kills seals, I'll bet you. No, I don't
know. That's amazing.
The state chancellor. Has to be somewhat of the seal of state.
Mm-hmm. What's that discharge emblem? Is that the old ruptured duck?
Yeah, that's the ruptured.
If you wore that, it was a crime.
Yes, that's a mystery.
That must have come right after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing of stars and badges.
Amazing.
Well, that's an old study. That's an old one. I think that goes back to the days of marshals, town marshals,
right.
Constables.
We do have one, assuming to be an attorney. Good, just so we get ours in there. Are we going to make a recommendation that these be repealed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
And you notice that, you know, it's really, of course, we didn't go back and check the legislative history in every one of these because, you know, you'd never get through it. But this one on wearing Multnomah County Sheriff's Department uniforms.
They had a strong lobby that year. I had the professional engineer again. There's another one. The professional engineer. You wonder how in the world he is.
The architect make
it? Well, I can see why they lobbied for that, because, you know, they wanted to keep all the business to the real engineer.
But the fraternal societies are really strong in these statutes.
Pretending to be a member of a religious society. Do you go to church? Oh, yeah.
Well, I like what the Montana court, they found those statutes unconstitutional because they said that a society or, you know, a fraternal organization, by adopting its own insignia, for example,
can't preclude
determine those. Whether other person could use that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I agree. Okay, that concludes perjury and related offenses. With your indulgence, I know the hour is getting late and the conversation mainly by the chairman is getting sillier, but let's turn to bribery and corrupt influences. Preliminary draft number 2, about the middle of your book. The third green tab on the front. Lay it on us, Roger, babe. You handed it to Harley.
No, I've got it here. And I don't seem to have one in this book. I don't know. Preliminary draft number 2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think I've got the minutes.
I've got the tab, but there's nothing in
there.
So I'll be speaking from memory.
Yeah.
Well, this is preliminary draft number 2, which incorporates the recommended changes brought up in our meeting sometime in August 1959. I don't have the preliminary draft number 1.
Here's mine in this book. It's in the other book.
I really should have mine because I've got mine marked with all the. No, it's probably in my desk. But I can tell by this one. No, it'd be an idea. That's all I can do. Well, Section 1 the definition of benefit was not changed.
I'll use it.
This was a result.
Subsection 2, pecuniary benefit, we amended that definition.
What did we add?
Well, we accepted political campaign contributions.
We have, remember we had all that. You and
well,
I.
Yeah, that's our other one that they haven't got wind of yet.
So now reads, pecuniary benefit means a benefit in the form of money, property, commercial interest, or economic gain. Now that is, there's some change there because we had originally said, or anything else of which the primary significance is economic gain, which was a little involved.
Well, this is a fearless, straightforward approach.
Right. But it doesn't.
We had a bad day one day, Don. We got a little carefree. And
well, I know, I sat in on this meeting.
You remember that? We walked away from the whole article.
Bury it
on
the back area. I'm glad I'm probably see
oh, boy.
Well, we got to the point, though. Tom, it was really funny. By the time you got down here, anybody that worked on your campaign was guilty of a crime.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Of course, some might think they probably are. They worked on mine.
I did inquire if Don from that league was a member.
Yeah, well.
Do you see any other way around that?
Well, the only other way around it is to do as I think Michigan did it. They have this long commentary after their section. They don't say anything in their draft itself, but they say, "But we realize, you know, in effect, the realities of life, and that, you know, and we're not intending to cover this type of conduct." But they bury that in their commentary, you see. But we lay it right on the line there.
What if a fellow's getting up in life and just all of a sudden goes to church and leaves $1,000 contribution in church? Is that bribe?
Well, we have trouble subpoenaing the chief witness.
Or chief judge.
Yeah.
Right. But
well, I don't see any real problem. It seems to me a bribe, money passed in the form of a bribe, isn't going to be reported.
This bothers me. It comes up under the heading
well,
of bribery.
Well, of course, that's when you file your statement, you know, mm-hmm. That's a problem.
One bribe, you don't know.
Well, no.
Three bribes on the 23rd. Got a little index in the back.
Now that's a good question. If you report it as a political contribution,
see,
even though you designated it as a bribe, are you excluding them from prosecution?
Yes.
Well, I think this is correct, though. This we've taken into corrupt practices, I think generally everybody is, that the way to go on that is disclosure. I can disclose everything and then let the public sock it to you. I mean, if you put down 15 bribes and list them as campaign contributions, it's up to the Congress.
It's just a different, the candidate is a different, in a different position than the, as you would think of, say, as a...
hearings officer, judge.
Judge, although the judge and
no, seriously, I don't think
the judge is a candidate.
I don't think that there's anything underhanded about this section at all. I think that
it's going to be
just Star Wars coming back to it.
Because, you know, Michigan says here, on the other hand, a broad interpretation of the benefits described as any valuable thing and any beneficial act could also be used to prohibit log rolling, i.e. the offer by legislator or other official to vote in a particular way in exchange for some, quote, beneficial act, such as political assistance at the polls, etc. Obviously, bargaining of this nature should not be covered by the bribery statute. And so on. And, you know, obviously it shouldn't. Should it?
Representative Carson?
Well,
we'll go on to sub 3. We had some trouble with the definition of public servant. Preliminary draft number 2, and with government, and with governmental function. So we now have defined public servant to include all that business.
And this really is a restatement of present statutory language, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
The public servant is, and we've broken it down. a public officer, employee of the state, or of any political subdivision thereof, or of any governmental instrumentality within the state, or a person serving as advisor, consultant, or assistant at the request or direction of the state, any political subdivision thereof, or any governmental instrumentality within the state, a person elected or appointed to become a public servant, although not yet occupying the position, and jurors.
I'm glad to see it says right here, a practicing attorney would not normally be a public servant. For all you attorneys.
Okay, no.
I agree, I think that's all you can do, they just meet it head on, like.
Well, yeah.
I think you said in humor it's a forthright approach, but I think it should be, I think that's perfectly right. As long as the acceptance is there.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go to section 2, and the only objection will include the whole draft. Any change?
Yes, there is. Preliminary draft number 2, we had the crime bribery all in one section. Section 1, which included bribe giving and bribe receiving. We had trouble with bribe receiving, so we broke it down now into two separate offenses. Section 2, bribe giving, which just restates what we had in section 2A before. But we made a change in section 3, bribe receiving. Now in bribe receiving, the person commits the crime of bribe receiving if while a public servant he solicits any pecuniary benefit with the intent that his vote, opinion, judgment, action, decision, or exercise of discretion as a public servant will thereby be influenced, or accepts or agrees to accept any pecuniary benefit upon an agreement or understanding that his vote, opinion, judgment, and so on will be thereby influenced.
When you think
the problem, as I recall, that we had in the first meeting was the agreement or understanding relating back to solicit, the word solicit. Because actually, you made this revision, I remember, during the meeting.
Yeah, I did. Seemed like a good idea at the time. And I think this meant the suggestions.
Well, in this way, we don't have to require an agreement or understanding on the basis of a solicitation. You don't have to prove an agreement or understanding.
Yeah, that's right. That's where we got.
That's the unilateral action.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That was the reason we broke it down this way, because that the initial solicitation would be the prohibited act. And this could take place before any agreement was reached.
In fact, you might not reach an agreement.
In fact, that would ordinarily be the case, I suppose, when you're talking about solicitation. So here he's soliciting the bribe with the intent to that his voter discretion or judgment would be influenced. And then of course, as far as an acceptance or agreement, then you would have an understanding, a bilateral arrangement then.
Any comments on 3? Do you care to have recorded? Please stop passing me the notes. Okay, 4?
Section 4 is, no change has been made there except that it was part of section 2. It's been made a separate section. Actually, under the preliminary draft number 1, section 2, sub C and D, set out defenses, which we now have in section 4.
What would you run number 1 by me again? I've lost the thought of that. What's the evil there that you're trying to get at but protect the defendant?
Well, there the public servant is attempting to extort money from the individual.
So when you bungle up, you're not guilty of a crime.
Right.
Okay. Five.
Section 5 is, and 6 is just a restatement of what was included in one section. Section 4 and preliminary 1, we just separated into giving and receiving. So we conform to the...
It's the deferred payment plan.
Yeah. Other than that, there's been no change made. In preliminary draft number 1, that was Section 4, rewarding past official misconduct. And A and B was, A was offering and B was receiving. Other than that, there's no change.
Okay, do we approve the draft, preliminary draft number 2?
We deleted intimidation in public and political matters because we thought it would be covered by the coercion statute. We eliminated the official misconduct, which I didn't feel should have been deleted, so that same statute now is in a new article called Abuse of Public Office, which...
You guys are really crafty, aren't you?
...is going through this subcommittee.
Yes.
At a later time.
And also the section on coercion was approved by the full commission as part of the kidnapping draft.
So you will see official misconduct again.
Okay, sounds good. Move with adoption, Harlan?
I sure do.
Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried. Where do we stand on sex crimes?
Well, against them, personally.
We have preliminary draft number 2 on sex offenses, which is ready to go back to the full commission in as much as it incorporates changes and amendments, although I did take the liberty of restructuring it somewhat, but did not, I don't feel, go beyond the intent of the desires of the full commission. So. It's, if you want to review that, you know.
Could you distribute it? I think it, don't know whether anybody else is.
Well, it has been sent out to everybody.
The second draft?
Preliminary draft number 2.
I got the amendments. Okay, I'll look.
Yeah, and further subcommittee action really isn't needed unless you wanted to look at it with the idea that you think something else needs to be done, just from the standpoint of the subcommittee, before we take it back.
Well, I don't know what my thought is. I don't know if anybody else is getting the phone calls and the messages that I'm getting.
Are you getting some?
Oh, indeed, yes. I've become very
We've had 3 phone calls which came in last Friday, the day that we had the commission meeting. Other than that, we haven't received anything.
I have a letter from Judge Felton, which the local lawyers now acknowledge that I have gone to the top of his list, and for the benefit of our recording secretary, I won't tell you what list that is, but I think you gentlemen know what list I'm talking about. Which just takes the hide off the thrust of the committee and whatever, and I was going to bring it, but I don't think I did.
What's he say?
Well, it's just that we're playing into the hands, and I'm paraphrasing it, playing into the hands of those who are reducing the morals of the children of our community, and that it's the wrong direction. It's a proper letter. It's not an abusive letter, but it's strong. And I'll bring it up and get copies out to you, members of the committee, because you fellows may be called upon to comment, as I have been.
Don't send them to us.
Well, of course, the preliminary draft number 2 on sex offenses did not really get to that issue because the main reason that the draft was sent back by the full commission was with respect to trying to draw some reasonable guidelines to distinguish among the different degrees of crimes on the basis of the age of the victim and the age of the defendant. And what I have done is to frame that in terms of a defense, which gets us away from the problem of having the prosecution trying to guess what the age of the defendant is and whether he's within a certain number of years of the victim. And that was the main thing that preliminary draft number 2 does. And that's just for second, third degree. And of course there isn't any defense allowed on the basis of age for first degree under any circumstances. So that isn't changed. But as far as the basic concept on the policy question of 16, for example, there's no change in preliminary draft number 2 because none was directed by the commission. But
apparently, okay. Judge Felton's thrust was more towards the whole idea of
Well, it'd be unfair. I apologize for not having it with me, but it'd be unfair. I can't precisely recall exactly. The thrust was to the fornication in the 16-year-old age bracket, reducing the problems there. And he's getting his information from Floyd's article. That's the sum total of his analysis of it. But it's a very strong letter, but it's not abusive. It's just, and I'll bring it up and let you send out a copy, because I think we all ought to have it. He's a recognized juvenile court authority in Oregon. And as long as he disagrees, I think we owe it to ourselves to take another look at it. And I'm sure we'll be doing weekly.
Oh, well, sure. And, of course, I think we should keep in mind that everything that the subcommittee does, and for that matter, everything that the commission does, as far as tentatively approving our final draft, our early draft, all of these things, in fact, the entire code is going to be subject to further review, and we're going to be having hearings on all these things. And that's, of course, that's what's unfortunate about a newspaper story like this at this stage. Although there's really nothing you can do to prevent it, because it presumes certain things that may or may not take place. You can't very well have a hearing and ask the public what it thinks about something if you don't have something to present to them, you see. And so that's
the legislature will have hearings on it.
Sure. So everybody will be given an opportunity, and that's what I told these people I talked with Friday, that they will certainly be given an opportunity to express their opinion and to voice any objection they have to this thing. But I think some people get the impression that, you know, that this is law now.
Or yeah.
It's just imminent. It's going to be law any minute.
Well, let's leave that. Do we want to have another subcommittee meeting before the October meeting of the committee?
Well, I'd like to see us have as many meetings as we can handle. The simple reason that we can really see the end of the tunnel now as far as getting our subsidy code put together. And our main backlog now is subcommittee work. Actually, the full commission is pretty current on everything. And it's just a matter of getting subcommittee action.
When's the commission meeting?
Well, the next commission meeting isn't set definitely, but we discussed the other day of trying to have a two-day meeting of the commission next month. And we can certainly keep the subcommittees busy between now and then. But, of course, our problem this month, for the balance of this month, is we've got the Bar Convention coming up, for one thing, next week. And we worked everybody pretty hard this month because of the hiatus in August. But depending on the availability of you good gentlemen, we can have a meeting as often as you want to meet for the next couple of months.
I'm afraid of that. Do we want to meet like a subcommittee on the 17th and a full committee on the 18th? That'd be a Friday and a Saturday.
Well, now we can do that. I think that we should probably reserve any decision on that until we find out whether we can have a quorum of the full commission for a two-day meeting. What we were thinking of is a Friday and Saturday session of the full commission. And of course, if we do that, that's going to hurt our chances of having subcommittees, because we can't very well ask people to be here 3 days in a row. I think that's...
Well, I think you can get them here, but I'd like to see
some
the zombies. See the zombies after the third day, yeah. You'd have to put a stick in them and get them out of the room.
But if I had my druthers right now, because of the fact that we do have more subcommittee work than commission work at this stage, I would rather see us have just a one-day commission meeting in the month of October and more subcommittee meetings.
Well, I was just thinking of Ken and Tony and...
Me?
Just... 30, 40 seconds ago, yeah. Just for a difference. Driving down.
Yeah. I don't think we'll meet in any event, whether it's a one or two-day meeting, we probably won't meet before the third week in October. So any time between now and then that we could schedule another, the next subcommittee, that's fine.
Well, if this week is out, which I presume next week is out, then it's the 29th through the 3rd of October, which might be available. Or the following week, and then the week after that's the third week. So it'd be somewhere between the, say, the 1st and the 10th.
Yeah. Now, if we could decide on a day right now, that's fine.
I've got, not that you're considering me.
I'm not anymore.
I realize that, but I have a meeting for the Thursday the 2nd in the morning down here.
How about Thursday afternoon?
Should be fine as long as we get out right about now.
Try a death case here.
Yeah. Let's try it.
How about, that'd be good. I don't know, you put it down, I